Yo, 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 what up, what up, what up? Welcome to another episode of 94 Feet with Coach JT. Do me a favor, as always, I need y'all to subscribe to the podcast, leave a like, leave some comments in the comment section. Thank y'all for tuning in as we approach year three of this podcast thing I've been doing, man. I appreciate you guys. Today, I'm lucky to have a former guest of year one, season one. I had on almost 2.5 years ago right now. Since then, she's made a lot of progress, made some changes, changes coast of living. And but the work is still the same or growing. So let me read her updated little brief bio right here about my guest. She is the American University, I'm sorry, Miss Patty Medina. Decision to join American University reflects her continued commitment to advancing diversity, equity, and inclusion with the college athletics. As the Associate Athletic Director of Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Belonging, Medina will play a key role in shaping university's approach to fostering a culture of belonging and equity with its athletic department program. However, she is a West Coast native, but she has since relocated. Former basketball coach, still a basketball junkie, attends camps, does clinics, a big supporter of the men's and women's game, but also she is heavy in her athletic director role since she's moved coast and been on the East Coast. So none other than athletic director, Miss Patty Medina. How you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for having me. I think I was actually like your second or third guest when you first started it.
It was definitely that time has come and gone so quickly. When I just kicked it off, tapped in with you, you had just got to the East Coast, made the decision to leave West Coast, and have not looked back since. In general, how are you doing? We're right here now. What was significant about that move? I mean, we can start right there. That was a big choice to leave this side of the U.S. and then go there. But what was so significant about that, and what encouraged you, or what vision or feeling did you get to go ahead and just jump, you know, make that move?
Yeah, so I actually had that stint in Texas. I was in Texas for 9 months, mm-hmm. and I didn't really have the best coaching experience. The team was awesome. I didn't have the best experience with my coaching staff or administration. And so it really put me in a situation where I got to evaluate what it was that I wanted to do. And it helped me transition out of coaching. And so when I decided to transition out of coaching, I got an offer to work at Bowie State. And I was going to come out here and work at Bowie State, but then COVID happened and everything was on a hiring freeze. So I had already relocated. All my stuff was here. And Bowie was like, we can't bring you on because of COVID. So then I said, okay, well, I'm already here. Like, I have to make something happen. Like, I refuse to drive back across country to California. Like, I'm going to make something happen here. So I started applying for jobs, ended up at Our Lady of Mount Carmel in East Baltimore. So I was in East Baltimore area, and I was there for almost 2 years as the assistant athletic director. So initially, when I transitioned out of coaching, I thought I was going to do sports management. I thought I was going to work and be a professor and do sports management. And so I did it for about a semester, but then the athletic director opportunities kept coming up. And so finally applied for it and ended up at Our Lady of Mount Carmel. And then once I was there, my AD that was there was very big on helping people elevate and continue to grow in their career. And so he saw a position came open and recommended that I apply for the position at Harford Community College. And at the time, I didn't think I was capable. I didn't think I was qualified. I had just transitioned out of coaching and it was my first, second year of athletic administration. And he really poured into me and really told me that the 17 years of coaching experience already gave me so much more experience than any other AD that he's ever met. And so I ended up getting the job at Harford Community College. I was there for almost 2 years, and then this position came up. Actually, yesterday was my 3-month anniversary, and so I've been here 3 months, and the position came up. One of the current associate athletic directors reached out to me and said, hey, we have this position available. See if you're interested in applying. If you are, like, you know, just go through the process. And I interviewed, loved it. I still love it. We're going right now through a transition with athletic administration. So we're getting a new AD. So it should be, hopefully I still love it a year from now, but I think I will, because it's just, it's such a community. And I'm just, every day I wake up and I'm like, I'm grateful, because what I couldn't do, you know, in 17 years of coaching, I wanted to become a D1 assistant coach or head coach at the Division I level. And in the 17 years that I was coaching, I didn't accomplish that. But in the 3 years that I've been in AD, I went from high school to JUCO to Division I, NCAA Division I. So it really just showed me that when I stopped forcing a situation, you know, I kept forcing coaching. And then finally I was like, okay, well, why do I like coaching? It's because of the leadership and the mentorship. And then I realized, like, I can still be a leader and a mentor, but instead of a team, now it's a department. And so now I'm here. So yeah. And another thing too, it's like, there's so much culture out here. I know California is very diverse and there's a lot of culture there, but I think the difference here is that the vast majority of diverse backgrounds, right? In Cali, you got Filipinos, you got Black people, you got Mexicans, you got pockets here and there, but out here it's a plethora of diversity, and it's awesome. And for me to be able to raise my son in an atmosphere where he's surrounded by, you know, some great people, it's been awesome. And literally, like, DC is in my backyard. I can, you know, drive into DC and I'm like, wow, I live by the monuments, you know, so it's pretty cool. So yeah, so that's how I ended up out here.
That's what's up. That's definitely dope to hear. I know the process, again, seeing the weather. So even prior to coaching at West Cliff, going up, watching some games, you can see the process, right? It's been a grind, right? Having to drive the young ladies here and there, having two subs on the bench, you know what I mean? Putting all that work, but realize, like, okay, wait, there's literally other ways to still make a difference, but also be effective through the game around sports, which is definitely dope. But then just not quitting too. I mean, you know, I know more of the backstory too, right? So it's been a real grind and sacrifice, right? So shout outs to you. But, and how far is the school you're at now from where the other two schools are out that way? Is it still the same area, or do you have to kind of commute pretty far? Or how far is that?
I relocated, but my relocation was only an hour. So Baltimore is about an hour from here. And then the school where I was at, the JUCO that I was at, was about 30 minutes out. It was in Harford County, which was like way past East Baltimore. So the school itself from here is about maybe an hour and a half too. But where I was living in Baltimore is about an hour away.
Okay, that's right. Not too bad. Not like coming from.
No, I literally, like, I spent because I got the job offer in like November, right before Thanksgiving, and so then I moved during Thanksgiving, and then I moved throughout like the Christmas break, and so I spent all of December moving, and it was just literally trips back and forth, hour drive back and forth, and. But it was an easy transition. So that was another thing that was very important to me, is like, I get to progress career wise, but not have to relocate, which, you know, as coaching, sometimes, like, you have to move very far sometimes. And so for me, the fact that the opportunity that I was getting to not only move up and progress in career was also fairly close to where I'm at now. So.
That's what's up. And in March is Women's History Month, as we know, right? A lot of dope women doing things. But also just, I mean, prior to coaching and stuff, you've been I know for sure, you've been a mental health advocate for years now. And just advocating for others, but advocating for athletes, right? At the point where very crucial in the point of that, your push for that, it was like when athletes really started more to come out, just communicate mental health support or needing it, or also people are giving out information for athletes. I want to talk a little about just that type of that atmosphere too, because that's not a classroom setting, but you're still providing information. You're educating people, but also you're making those environments fun for those who participate, whether they're students or families, whatever. I'll just talk about a little about that and that aspect of what you do in the mental health side of that.
Yeah. So I do the, as you know, Hooper Mentality, I do the camps in the summer. And so we've been doing camps. Right now, our most consistent camp has been our camp in Detroit. And so we go to Detroit and we run camps in Detroit, and we partner with Detroit Parks and Rec. We're hoping to go back this summer and possibly partner with the Detroit Pistons, and then just continue to do these camps across the U.S., hopefully do one in San Diego, as I normally do, and then Mexico. And so COVID really took a toll on the camps, but we were able to find other ways to really advocate for mental health awareness. And so one of the things that we started doing, aside from, you know, the Zooms during COVID, is that now we started a pledge where at the beginning of basketball season, I'll ask teams to pledge that they're going to designate a game to mental health awareness. So similar to how we do breast cancer awareness games, I want teams to designate a game where they'll do a mental health awareness game. And then we, as a nonprofit, donate the shirts. And so I did it at Hartford Community College last year. They wore the shirts during pregame. And then this year I had the opportunity for both of our men's and women's teams here at American University to wear my Hooper Mentality shirts during pregame. And so, you know, it's a way to just continue to build those conversations around mental health. And granted, the shirt is not a resource. It's not, you know, it's not a coping mechanism, but it kind of ends up serving that purpose, because people will come up and say, oh, well, what's Hooper Mentality? Like, what is that for?
Of course.
And then you say, oh, it's mental health. And I mean, you have a shirt, so I'm sure you've had some
conversations started every time.
Yeah.
Oh, no, even my sister, principal, she's like, I love my shirt. I wear my shirt, I love it. And it's time for us to get some more too. But it's a conversation starter, but also it's like, it's again, fashionable, stylish. You had an array of colors. I mean, you can get any color you want. You got any colorway, right? But it's a conversation starter, but it's self-explanatory. But it just, like, people know, right? Bring up a conversation to where you're not standoffish. Or we can just ask, hey, what is that?
Yeah.
Or we can have a conversation and do something you put on your chest, right? I mean, you are, and it is who you are though too, right? You're an advocate for it. So you gotta, you know, gotta put it out there. But that's definitely dope. And that's good to know going further, coming this next season's definitely connect you with some other schools. We gotta keep you. I know you're over there now, but we're gonna keep you representing over here well, so I can get some schools out here.
No, I actually had a school. I had a school in the Bay Area reach out about running a camp. So I'm sure we'll be out there at some point. If not this summer.
Yeah, definitely summer. Yeah, camps and the game situation, though, man. That game stuff should be, that should be simple.
Yeah.
That should be a simple, get these coaches together and help represent that for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, as coaches, we know, right, outside of coaches ourselves go through this stuff, the players as well, right? So, I mean, that's something that they definitely, it should be a no-brainer, you know what I mean, as far as that goes. I do want to, I know on our first interview, for those who may not know, she was one of our first guests I interviewed. During the COVID, man, was it right before COVID hit when you guys were, was it New York? I just talk about that little experience for a minute. And I know when I run this one, I'm gonna put some pictures back up, because to see the pictures and the involvement of community people, like just family, friends, whatever, that was such a dope experience through a round ball, right?
Yeah.
Through the ball, but to bring everybody together. But just talk about that experience a little bit and what that meant and what kind of brought that event together.
Yeah, so it actually originated in the Bay Area. I don't know if you remember, but I went to Dominican University, and so up in in Marin County, and I have college friends that I still keep in contact with, and so we would hop on Zooms and we would just talk, and we're all very involved in our communities and trying to, you know, just continue to elevate our community. And it got to the point where it was like, how do we create a space for our athletes, our young athletes, to advocate and have a voice, you know? Because if you remember when George Floyd's murder first happened, the protests were pretty violent. And so it's like, you can't take your children out to these protests. So we were like, well, how do we create a peaceful presentation? So we decided to do a march, and within that march we would, you know, dribble up and down the streets, and then we would have presentations before, during, and after the game. And then we ran it like as a basketball game, so at halftime, so we had the first walk, and then we had a halftime, and then we had the end of the walk. And so we, during the halftime of the march, we did the 8 minutes and 46 seconds. And so we dribbled, and we had one of the trainers from the Golden State Warriors came out and led in a workout for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. And what we wanted to do is really put into perspective how long that time is and how long George Floyd was being restrained. And so for us, it was very impactful just running it. But then what made it cool was that the traction that it picked up, right? So then that night, we were on SportsCenter, we were on the Bay Area News, and then next to, you know, they're calling, people from New York are calling saying like, hey, can we do it? And the cool thing was that we were the only march that was giving out like free t-shirts. And so our t-shirts would say like which said speak up and dribble. And we would, you know, we would yell and chant throughout the streets. And it was a community event, but it was also a way for us to really advocate for ourselves and to give our students a platform and a voice. And so ended up going to New York, did it in New York in partnership with Dykeman and then also The Post. And so we did two in New York. Then we were asked to go to Eugene, Oregon. So we partnered in Eugene, Oregon with some nonprofits there. And then we did it in LA and then San Diego. And so it ended up being like this tour of Speak Up and Dribble. And it was amazing. We sold the shirts to help pay for expenses. And, you know, as you know, like that's the only time I sell shirts is when I have something planned, because again,
it was,
all the profit goes to these initiatives. And so if I don't have anything planned, I'm not going to sell the shirts until I have something planned, so that anyone that purchases a shirt knows that, hey, I know where my money's going, right? And so, so that was my Speak Up and Dribble experience. Actually, it's crazy because fast forward to my current position, I'm the Associate Athletic Director for Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Belonging. And so I do the DEI work. And in my interview, I got a chance to speak about, you know, and talk about Speak Up and Dribble, and to be able to share the experiences and how I organized it and how we organized it together as a group and how we went across the, you know, the nation and did these events presentations. And so it was really awesome how that specific time in my life really prepared me for where I'm at now, right? And being able to have these uncomfortable conversations and being able to stand true on what I believe in and what I think is important, and really learn how to delegate within any administration, because you literally had to, you know, I don't know if you've ever organized a protest, but there's so many moving parts. And, you know, you have to go to police, you have to go to the city, you have to go, like, you can't just show up and protest. Like, it has to, I mean, you can, but if you want to have an organized one where the safety is a priority, you know, then you go through a lot of work. So it was really a big opportunity for me to really develop as a professional, but then it also propelled me into my DEI realm that I'm currently in.
That's dope. And I said, no, that's everlasting. Right? I said, it's the training you were getting before. I didn't know you were setting yourself up for success, but the work early now, it's like, hey, I got something to talk about, put it together, which is dope. Super effective, but it looked like, it's like I said, it was safe, but it was impactful too, you can see. And again, through the acts of just, you know, dribbling a basketball. But that brings people together, right? Mm-hmm. People watch it, people cheer for it, they participate in the activity. And that was super dope. And me talking about right now, your new role, the title is, if people don't know much about it, can be lengthy, of course, right? Or so many moving parts though, but just give us a little bit of background about what particularly that diversity, inclusion, all that kind of includes of, like, I guess a little bit of a daily walk, or kind of a summary of what you're doing on a daily basis, because you're interacting with people, all cultures, backgrounds, stuff like that too.
Yeah, so it is a very lengthy title. So the shortened version is Associate Athletic Director of DEIB. Normally it's DEI, but here at American, they added the B portion for belonging. And so what happened is that over the last few years, the NCAA has, you know, mandated for institutions to have a person in within athletics to be the designated DEI, you know, point person. And so certain institutions just assign someone and said, okay, you're going to be the DEI person. And then in other institutions like this one, they've actually hired someone to specifically do the work. And so my day-to-day is very different. Which is what I love about it, because I don't get bored. But things that fall under my umbrella are, for example, Black History Month games. I get to organize the Black History Month games. I get to organize any of our Pride nights, any of our cultural celebrations. So Pride, Black History Month, Hispanic Heritage Month, Asian Pacific Islander Month, like just different Women's History Month, like just different programming for that. But aside from that, I get to also figure out ways to continue to push the needle in regards to improving our diversity in enrollment and recruiting. So, like, I don't know if you're familiar with American, but it's a PWI. So there's a lot of, you know, predominantly white institution. And so there's a lot of room for growth. And so our thing is it's easy to recruit to the D1 level. It's fairly easy, right? It's fairly easy in a sense of like, you just, someone has to believe in what the coach is doing. In that sense, it's easy. But when you recruit diversity, you recruit it, but then how do you maintain it? And so that's where my job becomes interesting, because then I get to figure out ways to retain that diversity, right? Whether it's a staff member that is a diverse staff. So we have like one of the only Black female head coaches for women's soccer, you know? And so it's like, you know, the fact that she's not just a woman, but a Black woman in soccer, that's that for us, it's like, okay, well, how do we keep her here? How do we continue to provide resources? Same for women's basketball. You know, women's basketball is predominantly white, and they do have international students, which also includes in the diversity aspect. But then even the international students, like, how do we keep them from being homesick? How do we provide opportunities for them on campus to really feel like they belong? And so that for me has been my next goal. And so just finding ways to really be creative to make people feel like they belong. And one of the things that I find very interesting is that it has made me be very aware of what makes me feel like I belong, right? So it's like, I can't tell you how to improve your sense of belonging if I myself don't know what that even means, right? So like, as a minority, what does that look like in an office? How do you feel like you belong in an office? Is it because people come and talk to you in the office? Is it because, you know, people say hi to you in the hallway? You're invited to events. Like, what does that even look like? Or it might be, hey, they just come and respect your point of view. And so just, I've really have been growing in this role because I've gotten to a point where I've learned to really voice my opinions. And you know, I joke about it all the time. I'm like, yo, y'all gave the wrong person ammo. Because
so I was going to say, but then that's why they put you in the position that way too, though, because they need somebody to speak up, right?
Yeah.
And vouch or give their side of opinion or give the other perspective. Like, hey, on our culture or in this culture, they do things a little differently. This is how you can make them feel a little better, or this is how you make them feel welcome. And I was going to ask, but so you do these things for all the sports. You do for all the sports, trying to make sure they have different activities or different their wear for all the sports campus-wide.
Yeah, so I just came in, as I mentioned to you, this is only month three. So I came in the middle of basketball, which has been the easy transition for me because it's basketball. So then now I'm trying to come up with ways that we can do that for other sports, because obviously not every sport has the ability to have a halftime performance and to celebrate, you know, Black History Month or Pride Month.
So how can you?
How do we get creative to really make these events feel more belonging? You know, and it can be something as simple as a walkout song. You know, like allowing certain walkout songs or allowing certain players to take a knee during the anthem, and you know, just different things like that. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, how do we provide these opportunities for them to really be who they are authentically, and then be able to express that they belong and show that they belong, but then also continue to, you know, not just get complacent and like not just be like, oh, okay, well, they're having fun, so let's just leave it at that, you know. So now it's like, okay, well, do we want to create a Black Student Union, or do we want to relaunch our Black Student Union? Do we want to create a Hispanic Latino club? Like, do we bring FCA on campus? You know, it's just different things like that. So it's been awesome. I love that I don't have to like deal with budget or transportation. You know, obviously there's some positions where you get to be a sports supervisor, and then you do get to do some budgetary business. But for the most part, I've had the opportunity these last 3 months to really build relationships with coaches, so that when I come in and do ask them to evaluate something that they're doing, they know it's coming from a place of genuine interest and not like a personal attack. And so it's been interesting because I've had to call certain people out on what they're doing. You know, like I was on the phone with my friend and I was like, yo, like I actually have to tell Karen to stop being a Karen.
Yeah.
That's kind of what my job is.
Right. But I mean, like you said, I think the biggest thing, and hopefully they know, realize that, I mean, one, the people that's going to affect is going to appreciate it, but also people that you're working with realizing that it is work to do, or you can always improve, or things have changed, right? That's the big thing. Times are different, and you want to get student body or staff members to retain or stay on campus. You got to, you know, things got to adjust. You can't do things the way they used to be, which is definitely dope. I mean, you're only month three, right? But the work is, it's already ready, but it's a lot of work to be done, though. So, I mean, that's definitely dope.
Yeah.
And I know you got a busy schedule, too.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that they appreciate, and like I've had conversations, is that I don't just focus on the belonging aspect as like a ethnicity thing, right? So, like, when I speak about belonging, I don't just say, oh, I want to make sure the Black people belong, or the Latin people, or the Hispanic people, or the Asian people belong. For me, belonging is like a department wide. And so I've asked people from all cultures and all backgrounds, like, how do we make you feel like you love it here? Because I want to love it here. So how do I make you feel like you love it here? And then how do we keep you, you know, from leaving? And what are some ways that we can improve? And so it's been awesome. You know, one of the things I've had, like, so many people send me the reels or like Instagram posts of, like, you know, DEI positions being cut in Texas and Florida. Mm-hmm. And you know, there is that like thought in the back of my head of, like, okay, if, you know, there's going to be a presidential candidacy, there might be a change in the presidential candidate. So it's like, what are the repercussions that come with that, you know? And so for me, I think ultimately my position is something that's needed right now, but I think in the long run, and I would hope in the long run, that positions like mine ultimately get dissolved to the point where it's like, hey, we don't need someone to come in and tell us to be diverse. Like, we're already diverse, you know? So, like, that would be the goal. It's like a consulting, right? You bring someone in to help you diversify. And, like, once you're doing that, you no longer need that person. And so it's like, it would be a great day. Not a great day, because I'd be out of a job.
That'd be the one reason, though, if it's sustainable, you go, okay, you know what? I did my job. They're maintaining it. I can move on because of this now. Yeah. But yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah. So that's what I'm alluding to, is that, you know, I hope that as a nation, we're in a space where these positions are not needed.
Because we made progress for everybody's adapted to it, right?
Yeah, because we don't have to tell people, like, hey, recruit, diversity, make sure you're showing inclusion and equity. Like, hopefully there's a day in our time where we don't have to actually have a person in place saying you need to do these things, you know. And so that's kind of where it's like, people send me these posts and be like, oh my God, you just got the job, and might cancel it. I'm like, I doubt they'll cancel it here in the nation's capital, but it's definitely something throughout the United States that has been a very contradictory topic and controversial topic at that.
Sure. Good. That's good to know, though. I mean, you know, you hear the word put out, thrown around, or used in so many different places and titles, even with NBA games, people, NBA franchises have that person that does that. But I'm like, why do you need that? But it makes more sense. Knowing about it now, I see why. But hopefully it should be automatic. It should be there no matter what. You shouldn't have to have, it's always, this is their job. I get it, but you should want the regular staff. Right. Whoever you hire should be like, they should think that way too. So that was definitely
absolutely.
Definitely good information to know. So I know you got to keep busy, but I know I already got your, I got your triple threat the first time. But now, given that you're years later, times has changed, logistical change, I need your triple threat, your three things right now going forward as you're in a new position. Just three things that that you, like, either have changed for you or that you kind of hold on to now that are value, or how you kind of carry yourself now going forward. Because again, new position, new state, new city, town, time frame difference now. You know what I mean? Give me your triple threat right now. Three things.
Yeah. So I think my three, and every year I choose a word, right, that is going to be like the focus of my year. Mm-hmm. And my word last year was intentionality, like being very intentional, and being intentional in my relationships, being intentional in, like, who I spend time with, what I spend time doing, you know, what I listen to, read, all of that. So that was my word last year, was being intentional And I want to continue that, right? So like every, especially as you become more well known in any field, right? And you know, as a coach, like the more you people you know, the more you're going to be sought out. So more people are going to come to you and be like, yo, JT, like, can you help with this? Can you help with that? And so me maintaining a sense of intentionality, it has allowed me to really determine what to say no to and what to say yes to, right? And so, and I'll speak on a more personal level too, like even who I date, right? If I'm very intentional, it's easy for me to say, yo, this is not gonna work, or okay, I can pursue this, right? Obviously I'm still single, so there's still things that like it hasn't really met that intention, right? Because I don't wanna date just to date. People date to get married. I date to elevate my brand. I date to be a power couple, you know? And so again, like intentionality is really, even with parenting, like I try to be very intentional of like the time that I spend with my son, you know, let's get out the house. Let's do this. Let's do that. Like teaching him things about college and having conversations about college, you know, those are things, again, intentional. So intentional would be my first one. Mm-hmm. My word for this year is discipline. So once you get the things that you want, how do you continue to stay disciplined to want them, right? And so for me, discipline is something that I've struggled with because I'm easily swayed in a sense of like, oh, I don't have to work out today because I worked out yesterday, you know? And so even in discipline or in discipline of like, I said I was going to do something, I need to do it. You know, I need to hold myself accountable. And so with discipline comes accountability. So that's been that. And then my last one is, it's crazy because it's been something I've been focused on, which is mental health, but I've never really put into the forefront of my life. And so my self-care and my mental health would be my third one. Because one of the things I realized is that if you can't pour from an empty cup, and we just had a conversation with one of the coaches and we were talking about, you know, pouring from empty cups, like you can't be your best self and you can't present yourself to others as your best self if you keep pouring from an empty cup. And so trying to find ways that I feel fulfilled and that I feel that like I can replenish myself so that I can be the best mom, the best coach, the best friend, the best sister, the best, you know, associate athletic director. Like I just want to continue to find ways to fill my cup so that I can be that. So yeah, so self-care, intentionality, and discipline are my three triple threats for 2024. It'll be
2024, man.
It is that,
man. Shout out to Kobe, RIP, man. Thanks for your time. I know, again, probably more Zoom meetings and other meetings to go.
I'm done. Almost 4 o'clock today, so we're good.
4 o'clock on the East Coast time, so you're good for the day. That's what's up. But best of luck to you, for sure. Definitely got contact about some opportunities to collab with the game stuff situation, and as well got to get a camp out here in Sacramento, not Oakland. Like, you know, we different. We separate the two over here. Nah.
Yeah, and I got to get 2 years more shirts.
Oh yeah, for sure. No, yeah, I gotta get up in for sure. Cause I mean, it's kind of teasing us. It's raining, and it's cloudy again. We had some rain a few days, so hopefully the sun will be here for a while. Soon enough. But oh yeah, definitely that. But I appreciate your time. Again, you guys, thanks for tapping in. Women's History Month here, man. I'm here with the coach, with the athletic director, with the mental health therapist, whatever you want to call it. She is what she is. She's been around the game, the advisor, whatever you want to call it, man. She's got skills in it. She has experiences. That's the best teacher, but also that's the best relatable information we could give is our life experience. So I appreciate you, Miss Medina. Thanks for tuning in. Appreciate y'all. We out.